In their Left in the Law segment today, Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker take up the wave of recent lawsuits filed by cities and states against the oil industry in the U.S., based on the industry's damage to communities and covering up their own scientific data on the lethal threat of fossil fuels to the planet. Jan and Mike talk about the importance of these lawsuits in the broader climate justice movement, as well as some of the legal and political challenges. They begin their segment by commenting on an online news report by Greenpeace UK where a senior ExxonMobil lobbyist talks about how he works to fight off U.S. climate legislation. Listen to what the lobbyist has to say.
Did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yes. Did we join some of these shadow groups to work against some of the early efforts? Yes, that's true. But there's nothing illegal about that. We were looking out for our investments. We were looking out for our shareholders.
Mike, those were the words of a senior lobbyist with ExxonMobil explaining that covering up research on climate change is perfectly legal. I don't know how this interview affected his future job prospects, but let's start with his claim that nothing the oil lobby does is illegal. Is he correct on that score?
Well, unfortunately, he's close. You know, the oil lobby gave $140 million to politicians in the 2020 election cycle alone. They are a chief architect of the laws themselves. The senators, the representatives, politicians down to local levels are dependent on oil companies for their contributions. They're even dependent on them for people who draft the actual laws that govern how they shape opinion. So, yeah, much of what they do, even most of what they do, is entirely legal.
I mean, during the Trump administration, of course, we were very aware of the horrifying rollback in regulations and issuing permits right and left for drilling on public lands. Now the Biden administration has pulled back on some of that, but has been very disappointing on many fronts. So the fossil fuel industry is still a big player through their lobbyists.
Well, what people have done in response that has been pretty effective and is really gaining momentum now that has become clear that the fossil fuel industry itself has long known that climate change is real and that its own activities have been responsible for a big chunk of it, are civil suits.
Before going into some of the civil suits, can you explain some of the difference between a criminal prosecution, which some are calling for, including a recent article on Jacobin magazine, versus filing civil suits?
Well, criminal prosecutions are all very hypothetical now because there are no criminal laws that the corporations are violating. But civil suits are really here and now a reality. The most effective ones evolved from what were formerly nuisance lawsuits 500 years ago in England. If you bought 25 hogs and put them in your backyard and they started rooting through your neighbor's fences, they could sue you as creating a nuisance. And that became part of the common law that now is effective in every single state and county and has been used in very sophisticated ways. Most recently in Oklahoma, the state received $500 million from Johnson & Johnson as settlement for damages done by the opioid crisis.
Some nuisance.
Yeah.
How do the impacts of fossil fuel get pursued through these nuisance laws?
Well, the big case in the U.S. Supreme Court was initiated by the city of Baltimore, which has been profoundly affected by the rising ocean. They pointed to concrete ecological damage and named the fossil fuel companies as responsible. So what the Exxon and other equivalents have done typically is try to move it all to federal court, which doesn't have that common law tradition, and say that the Clean Air Act and various congressional legislation has preempted all these local lawsuits. It's got, it's a colorable legal argument. I don't think it'll work in the long run, but it achieves delay. And since they're an industry in retreat now, delay is maybe the best result they can hope for.
So in the Supreme Court ruled what seemed to be in favor of the fossil fuel industry in that Baltimore case in May, by a 7-1 ruling, which was surprising. I think only Sotomayor voted against the fossil fuel industry, but it seemed to be a narrow ruling on procedural grounds that shifted it back to the state. So in that sense, was it a partial victory for these state and city cases because it did go back to the, I think, Maryland courts?
Well, it's essentially a punt. It's not going to be really determinative of anything. And what the cities and counties and states want to do is to discover. That's the power of a civil suit, to force them to make admissions under oath, to pose interrogatories to Exxon, asking them precise questions. What did you know? When did you know it? And then if they tell lies, they can be prosecuted criminally under long-established criminal laws. To hold legislative hearings, if you have a state that's not so dependent on fossil fuels, maybe they can have a committee hearing examining the effects of climate change, and then people have to testify under oath. Again, there's a way to get them under the criminal system by either having them admit what they've done, admit what they've known, or to deny it and then prosecute them.
Well, let's talk about the complaint filed last year in a district court in Minnesota by its Attorney General, Keith Ellison, against the American Petroleum Institute, ExxonMobil, Koch Industries, and Flint Hills. Ellison gained national recognition for his role in prosecuting Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd. The opening sentence in the complaint is quite damning and direct, and this is from the complaint itself. Minnesota is in the midst of a climate change crisis, and goes on to say, warming will continue with devastating economic and public health consequences across the state, in particular, disproportionately impact people living in poverty and people of color. Goes on to say, the economic devastation and public health impacts from climate change were caused in large part by a campaign of deception that defendants orchestrated and executed with disturbing success. So can you speak to this strategy, how in the complaint and the likelihood of it moving anywhere in the courts?
What they want to do is highlight recent admissions. There's been a profound change, I think, in the general attitude, and one that is pregnant with possibilities of a really serious shift in sentiment, which began in 2015 when Columbia University and the LA Times discovered all the research that Exxon had done, original and pretty deeply and well-constructed research showing that climate change is really real, and their own activities are a chief cause of it. So now they're not in the position, what they've done via their nonprofit institutes and whatnot is to create a picture of climate change as something that's really complicated, that there's evidence here, but there's evidence there that we're all responsible for.
Right, that diffusion of social responsibility that to some extent is reproduced or perpetuated by even some in the climate movement itself, that we're all guilty and,
sure,
and sinned and need to be saved by grace, but which is to some extent the case. But how does this shift that moral responsibility?
What they're going to do by saying defendants orchestrated a campaign of deception is that even while their own research showed that their work caused climate change and caused deleterious effects, they said at the same time that we don't know what is really causing all this. We may or we may not be contributing a little bit. So they want to hammer on these admissions to use the research Exxon has done to make them admit that they've done it, that they knew about it, that they've even allocated capital on the basis of that research, to make it more and more obvious that they're running a campaign of deception.
Which is a more important grounds for the complaint than just somebody's executive saying, well, I didn't get the memo, you know,
because right,
they very, very intentionally distorted and deceived even their own research findings.
Yeah, they want to be able to say, well, you did get the memo. And not only did you get the memo, you decided to spend $80 million here rather than there because of the memo. I mean, you know all about it. You always have. Not always, but certainly in the recent decades.
And some of this, the translation of research findings into a you know, a public-facing campaign comes through the American Petroleum Institute. And I thought it was interesting that they were a plaintiff. Often there's not enough discussion of the what is the American Petroleum Institute. How do you think they have a different status in this complaint? Are they somewhat like the National Rifle Institute, Association of the NRA, and their role of kind of covering the tracks of industries targeted by social justice movements?
Their whole purpose is to create an air of detached neutrality of science, of research, and they're entirely funded by fossil fuel companies. And it's all about shifting opinion. And they were named as a guilty party here because they are just another face of the same institutions, of the corporations that dominate fossil fuel policy. They've been around since almost the beginning of the whole industry. A really interesting and I think a devastating quote was made by Edward Teller, the man responsible for the hydrogen bomb, in 1959, on the 100th year of the fossil fuel industry's history in the U.S. He said in New York to the API, as it's called, he said, you know, really, because of greenhouse emissions, the Arctic's going to melt and New York City's going to be underwater. So we got to be careful. He said that in 1959. This is the idea that this is all kind of mysterious and murky and diffuse, and that each and every separate person is involved, is a myth that enables them to step aside from the fact that there's a tremendous amount of global warming that is the direct result of their own activities.
So one of the questions I've had for some time with the role of legal cases in social movements is how you move from these pretty detailed, highly footnoted briefs and motions into findings that can shift public discourse on climate change. And can you speak to that? Because the discovery evidence that, or testimony and discovery, it remains private. And for a very long time, these cases move along through the courts with various, you know, armies of lawyers involved, usually the, you know, fossil fuel industry can lawyer up in a very, very powerful way. What do you see their potential for shifting, and I think contributing to the kind of radical transformative goals of the climate movement?
Well, they can be a big help. Of course, the whole movement has to range from direct action on the ground all over the world to stockholders who make resolutions at annual board meetings. But civil suits have a really important way, a role to play, because they can expose truth and admissions. Once these admissions are made, once these interrogatories are answered, then it's made public, either directly or by leaks, and becomes something that the fossil fuel industry has to explain. Well, we said that, but it was in a different context. Then media people will ask them questions about their testimony at a deposition. This is how the tobacco companies, for example, were diffusely attacked and generally discredited by information gleaned from civil suits and from the fact that some civil suits succeeded. But really, it's a process of information gathering and then information distribution where they can be really helpful.
And so perhaps we can continue to follow this case over time and contribute to some of that broader public discourse as these interesting motions and responses work their way through the courts and kind of evaluate the strategy as we go.
That's right.
This is Jan Hocken talking with Mike Snedeker today about civil suits against the fossil fuel industry.